Something for the weekend. Good morning, it's Trina Mara. I'm thrilled to have Jackie Smith on the line, and Jackie is a TUSLA principal social worker. And today I wanted to talk about fostering, because actually a couple of months ago on the Damien Farrelly show, we heard about a lady who was nominated as being a bit of a hero in her area because she's fostered loads of children. And it just got me thinking, like, how does somebody go about doing that? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people who are interested. So Jackie is here to fill us in on all the details. Morning, Jackie. How are you?
Hi, Trina. How are you? It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So listen, there's different types of fostering. What are the different types of fostering that people can do?
Ireland actually has one of the highest rates of fostering in the world. 92% of the children who are in care in this country are in care with a foster family. So we have been really successful in terms of people reaching out to look after other children, but the numbers applying have gone down in recent times. So it's something that's really badly needed here. And as you mentioned, there's quite a few different types of fostering that people can look at doing. So we have probably what most people will think of straight off the bat is the longer term fostering, which is where a child comes to live with you and your family with a view to them being there for quite an extended period of time, maybe their entire childhood. What we in TUSLA call long-term fostering, I suppose, is anything kind of over a year, year and a half, where it's foreseen that the child is likely to remain in foster care.
Okay.
So that is one that people think of often. And that children coming into long-term foster care can come in at a variety of ages. So they can be young, or they can be children who come into care at maybe 12 or 13 and they remain in care until they reach adulthood. Other types then are shorter term foster care. It could be a number of weeks or a number of months. And it's usually where we foresee a plan for the child to return home. So an example of why you might need short-term foster care, for example, might be that a family needs some support while they're addressing issues. They need a safe and secure environment for their child to be in while that takes. So for example, maybe attendance at a treatment program, and there just isn't anybody available in the actual family network who can look after the child for that period.
Yeah.
Great type of fostering, very, very rewarding, because you can be part of, you know, helping a family to overcome adversity and helping a child then to be able to return and grow up and live with their own family. So that's really rewarding. We also have emergency foster care, which happens when a child needs to come into a foster placement at very short notice. Something unforeseen has happened and we need people who are available at very short notice to look after a child. And that could be for a night, it could be for a few nights while an assessment takes place to see what is the best plan for that child. Another common type of foster care that's really interesting is respite foster care. And respite is where a family maybe need a break every so often, or they need a little bit of extra help. And perhaps in this particular family, there isn't, again, the extended family. So maybe the grannies or the aunts who would do the, you know, take the child for a weekend every so often and give mom a little bit of break. Mm-hmm. And maybe a family is struggling, they have their own issues. And just by having that little bit of time out, that can really keep a family together and be a really, really supportive part of the general supports that are there. So a foster family might look after a child one weekend a month, just in the case maybe of like an extended family member type scenario. And again, that's a lovely type of foster care, can be very, very supportive and can suit some families very, very well in terms of their own commitments and living arrangements. Another type of foster care that's quite interesting is a thing called supported lodgings. And supported lodgings is something that happens for older children, 16, 17 year olds, who are moving towards independent living and who need a place to live where they are kind of semi-independent. So they still have the supervision and the support of a caring and responsible adult to make sure that they need a rest, but they are moving towards independence. And that type of foster care can work really well, again, for some families who have other commitments, and maybe that kind of full-onness of a very small child wouldn't work so well for them, but an older child who is moving towards independence might work really well. And it's a really great type of foster care in the sense of, with those older teenagers and older children, there's, you know, the milestones of applying for college, getting a leaving cert, entering into adulthood. So being part of supporting a child through that is a really wonderful thing. And I know some of our carers who foster older children and teenagers, you know, they would talk about that as sometimes being the unseen rewards of fostering teenagers that we don't always think of when we think of a teenager.
Yeah, and they might not have those opportunities without that support, you know, to apply for college or to do the things that, you know, if they were still in their own home, like maybe they need that kind of push.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And we, you know, have older children in care and they are, you know, proceeding into wonderful phases in adulthood, you know, entering apprenticeships, doing, you know, further education of all sorts. And it's a really wonderful thing to be part of helping a young person achieve their full potential, you know. Yeah. And even if it's moving into work straight from school, you know, that's a huge thing we negotiate. And many of us take that for granted that we had support there to do that, you know, to help us figure out how do you deal with your boss. And so foster carers that are involved with older children, they get a really great opportunity to be part of that. You know, as I say, our carers who look after older children, they would talk about that a lot, and being part of those really important milestones that you forget that older kids have milestones as well.
Jackie, are they always troubled children that go to foster homes?
Well, look, I mean, children who've had come into care have experienced trauma. You know, a move from your family of origin is in itself, you know, traumatic. So they certainly are children who have additional needs in that regard, of additional needs for support and stability and security, you know. But just like the children out there in the general population, you have all kinds of kids with all kinds of personalities, all kinds of needs, all kinds of characteristics. And sure, some kids may, you know, they may be working through their trauma. Sometimes that might come out in some of the behaviours that they have. And I suppose that is why when you become a foster carer, when you're trained to become a foster carer, you get a lot of support in terms of, you know, how to understand children's behaviour, how to support children. And then you have a whole support network around you. The other thing that we are extremely mindful of is what we call matching. So when you have undergone the process of becoming a foster carer, your social worker will know you very well. And we take great care to match children and carers so that to give the placement the maximum opportunity of being successful. And so we look very carefully at, you know, the experiences, the knowledge, the confidence of the carers that we have, and we try and make sure that we match accordingly. So there's lots and lots of support. But I suppose, you know, children come into care because of difficulties in their environment and in the world around them most of the time. So, you know, it's something that happens to children, you know, and they're just kids usually looking for stability and support and safety and those normal things that people can provide. And those things are just really, really healing in and of themselves.
Just asking about that, the kids that are in foster care, do they still have access to their families, or is that kind of cut off for a time?
Yeah, no, access is a really important part of foster care. So I suppose one of the key things with foster care is you are looking after a child, but that child remains a member of their own family. And that's really important. It's really important for those children. So where it's safe and where it's possible, access is almost always part of the plan. We do that because we find that works best for the child. And at the centre of any child's plan is what is in the best interest of the child. So that's what we look at. And for most children, the identity formation and understanding their family of origins and maintaining the links with their family of origins is really important. Because although things mightn't have gone right and children might have needed to come into care, that doesn't mean that there weren't other things in their family that were really positive.
Yeah,
you know, and that were really good and should be maintained. I suppose as social workers, it's our job to make sure that happens in a safe and positive way for the child. And often it does. And I've seen really positive relationships between foster carers and biological parents or grandparents, aunts, uncles. Children may often have siblings who are also in care and they'll have access with their siblings, or they might have siblings who are at home that they have access with. Overall, we find that when there's good access that's managed well and that children are getting enjoyment from, that it actually promotes placement and it actually makes their foster care experience way more positive, because part of the foster care experience is that they didn't lose out on having contact with their family and they know who their family are, which is really important.
Jackie, who can foster then? Are there rules and regulations as to who can and can't foster in Ireland?
Yeah, there sure are. We work in accordance with standards and regulations that have been put together, I suppose, to ensure that we are really clear on who we are placing vulnerable children with. Because obviously foster care is taking responsibility for some of the most vulnerable people in society. So it's really important that we are really clear on who our foster carers are. So there are certain standards and regulations involved, and anybody who applies to become a foster carer will undergo quite a rigorous assessment as well as training to prepare them for their fostering journey. But in terms of kind of what does a foster carer look like, I suppose our foster carers are representative of the general population in Ireland. So people from really diverse backgrounds, cultures can absolutely apply. And I suppose what I would encourage people is if it's something that you're thinking about, something that you're interested in, the best thing to do is to make contact with TUFLA, because we can go through it. But I mean, just to give you a sense, often people will ask, you know, about are there certain things that might preclude me? So, you know, do I need to be married? That sort of thing. So what I would say is, look, regardless of your marital status, you can apply to foster. So it doesn't matter if you're single, widowed, married, separated, none of that, you know, will impact. You can foster if you rent or if you own your own home. You can foster if you are in a heterosexual relationship or if you're from the LGBTQI plus community. We really, really welcome people from a diverse range of backgrounds, because foster children come from a diverse range of backgrounds. And as I mentioned there earlier, in terms of matching, it's really important that we can look and have a diverse range of foster carers that will suit children. We're really interested in having foster carers from the new communities in Ireland and our minority communities, like the travelling community, because we have children from all of those communities who are looking for foster placement. The most important thing at the bottom of it all, and the standards and the regulations, what it's about is making sure that your home is safe, stable and secure. You know, if you've had difficulties in the past, that might not preclude you from fostering. What it's about is where you're at now. So is your life stable? Have you space for a child and time to give a child? Because our foster children do need time and attention and care. Is your home secure? Have you got stability? So if you've got a home and you're renting, for example, that's not an issue, but you do need stability in your rent. So we need to know that, you know, if a child comes to live with you, they're not going to have to move house really soon. They're going to know for at least the next year or so that this is where their bedroom is going to be. This is where their bed is going to be. These are the things that are really important. You know, sometimes people say, well, I have a disability, so can I foster? And the answer is, you surely can. What it comes down to is the type of fostering and your ability to meet the needs of those children. Okay. Another one that's really common thing is people will wonder about working.
My next question was exactly that, yeah.
So, yeah, that comes up a lot. And I suppose, actually, you can foster and work. That's absolutely a possibility. And what you do need to consider, I suppose, is the age range of the children that you are going to foster. So some jobs will work better for some types of fostering than others. So, for example, a newborn baby is going to need somebody at home with them full time for a period of time, because they need to establish the bond. It's not possible to sit down and speak to them about it. They need just to be with one or two main carers for a period of time while they figure out, oh, okay, this is my world and this is where I am. But if you're talking about a 15 or 16 year old, that's a different situation. So they're maybe more independent. They're able to, you know, manage a certain amount of independence. So working alongside that kind of fostering works really well. It also depends obviously on your hours of work. So, you know, we have a lot of foster carers maybe who work shorter days, or who are in the education professions, or maybe work shift work off to their partners. So much like when, you know, you have your own children, people will work around it. So again, I would say, don't ever think this is going to write me off. There's no point in me contacting. Make the contact, have the conversation.
Yeah,
And see where you're at.
Because every single case is different, isn't it? Because you're not going to work the same hours as I'm going to work. And, you know, people will work weekends and night shifts and all kinds of things. So, yeah, it's definitely doable. What happens at the assessment then? Say if you get through to that stage and an assessment is going to be carried out. I assume a social worker will come out to your home and have a look and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. So it's pretty detailed and in-depth, which I suppose is right, given the vulnerability of the children. But, you know, people would say it's not a terrible process. when you make contact with TUSA, we will go through lots of information with you to make sure that you're making kind of an informed decision and it's the right thing for you and the right thing for your family to proceed and become a foster carer. And then once you decide to go ahead and apply and everyone's in agreement that that's the right thing, you will be given an application pack, which involves filling out a number of consents. So we need to get lots of background checks. So just as if you were going to work with children, you'd be asked to do GARDA checks and various checks like that. The same thing happens when you decide that you'd like to apply to become a foster care. So you have to provide referees, medical, GARDA check, anybody that you've worked with children, stuff like that. And you fill out an application form. Your case will be assigned to a social worker, so allocated to a social worker who will conduct your entire assessment. And that involves a number of visits to you, and if you have a partner, to you and your partner. And if there's children in your home already, the social worker will also meet with them. And we'll explore, I suppose, your background, your experience with state, your motivation to foster. There's some education components in that assessment as well, looking at what's involved in fostering. We do health and safety checks on your home as well, just to ensure that it is a suitable environment. And as well as all of that, then there is a training that takes place for all new foster carers, where the main components and dimensions of fostering are gone through, and there's an experienced carer generally involved in those trainings as well. And at the end of that process, which could take a number of months, the social worker will write a report, an assessment report, and they will go through that report with you. Now, if at any time during this assessment there are any concerns as to whether this is the right path to proceed with, the social worker will always discuss that with an applicant at the time. So there's no danger of an applicant being brought to the end of an assessment and suddenly finding out that actually we're not sure that this is the right thing for you. So as we go through it, if there's any issues coming up, they're discussed, they're explored. And then the assessment report is written, and the social worker makes a recommendation around whether or not this person should be approved to foster. And that report then goes to what's called a foster care committee, which is a committee made up of a variety of professionals and young persons growing up in care, experienced foster care, and they ultimately decide whether or not a person should be approved to become a foster care. And I suppose those are the checks and balances that are in place to make sure that our foster carers who are approved and go through the process, that this is the right thing for them and it's the right thing for the children who will be placed with them. Yeah. So it's a pretty involved process.
It seems to be, yeah, it's quite detailed. But it has to be, doesn't it?
It does. Because I suppose at the end of the day, these are some of the most vulnerable people in society. Mm.
Do you ever find you're going through this process and you'll meet people who halfway through go, oh, I'm not too sure about this after all?
Yeah, it can happen. Now, I will say it doesn't happen too often, just because there's a lot of work done before people apply to make sure that they understand and that they've explored all the various dimensions. So you would have a lot of people, a certain percentage of people who will inquire, and they might say, do you know what, I'm going to park this now for a while. Gotten the information, I've realised that not this year, maybe next year. Yeah. So it does happen, but it's not so common because of the amount of work that's put in before the application.
Right.
Now, in the event that it happens, look, that's fine, in the sense that it's more important that somebody feels comfortable to say, I don't think I can go ahead with this at the moment.
Yeah. There's a guilt though as well, Jackie, isn't there? You know, that you're thinking, oh God, like a child needs this home, and I'm turning around and saying, no, actually, do you know, it doesn't really suit me at the moment. I'm sure, you know, for anybody who's putting themselves forward for this, there is that guilt there as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, usually that happens as part of the process. So you'll have been working with your social worker, and usually if it is happening, it's something that everybody is coming to the conclusion of together, because you'll be exploring it. So it's a really supportive environment in terms of that. And I mean, you know, just because it's not working for a person today doesn't mean that in a year or 2 years or 5 years that mightn't be. And we often see people actually come back who maybe inquired or started the process and, as you say, realised it wasn't the right time or something happened in their lives, and they do come back. And that's the thing. And it's more important to have somebody who is at the right moment and ready to give what is required than for people to feel obligated, because that won't work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people would experience it as quite a supportive environment, because it's in nobody's interest to bring people through unless, you know, that's really the right thing. So, yeah, it usually happens in the context, you know, of like a discussion, and it's a process. And by the time that comes probably everybody has come to the same conclusion at that point, you know?
Yeah. Jackie, is there financial support then for foster parents? Because it's not cheap having kids at home. And I can tell you that much from first-hand experience. So is there support there?
There is, sure. There's a number of supports. So there's an allowance paid to foster carer to cover the cost, the additional cost in your home for having a child. And that allowance is €352 a week for children over 12, €325 for children under 12. And that is to support, as you say, that additional cost, the additional food, the running up and down the road, be it to access or to activities, and the cost of activities and clothing and all those bits and pieces. Children who are in care are also entitled to a medical card, so their medical expenses are covered in that manner. And once children have been in care over 6 months, the foster carer can apply for children's allowance. So those benefits are there to support the additional cost of having a foster child in your home. But we do provide other supports that are also really important. So, you know, you do, foster carers have linked fostering social workers whose job it is to check in with the foster carer, make sure the foster carer is doing okay, offer the foster care kind of supervision and support in their role as a foster carer. We have a out-of-hours phone service now available to all our foster carers. So should something happen or they're concerned or they're not quite sure what to do and the social work offices are closed, there's a phone number there that they can ring and get support from a social worker on. And then, of course, in Tusla, we have access to a variety of therapeutic support for children who are in care, which we can access. And then around the country, there's also support groups. There's support groups for the biological children of foster families. So there's a real variety of supports all around the country to assist foster carers along their foster care journey.
Yeah. Does it ever lead to adoption in the end?
It can do. It's quite a long process and very much dependent on where the child is in terms of their care journey, where the carers are. Decisions like that, like all the decisions that we make, they come down to what's considered to be in the best interest of the child. So we have, for every child that's in care, there's a process called the child care review, and it happens really regularly. So once every 6 months for new children, once every year for children who've been in care over a certain period of time. And that will always consider the variety of options. So it will look at, is it right for a child, should a child return home to their family of origin, should they remain in foster care, and should adoption be considered. And certainly there are quite a number of children who have been adopted from foster care, but it's all dependent on that particular child's situation.
Oh, loads of information there. Brilliant to get it though, Jackie. If anybody is interested in getting more information or in applying to be a foster parent, how do they do that?
So we have a really lovely website called fostering.ie, which people can click on to. And on that website, they'll find videos of some of our experienced carers talking about their experience and lots of information about what's involved in the process. We also have some really nice videos from our most recent recruitment campaign from young people who grew up in the foster care here in Ireland talking about that experience. We have a free phone number, which is 1800-226-771, and if you phone that, you will be able to speak to someone who will put you in touch with a fostering social worker in your area. That number is also on the website, fostering.ie. And we have an email address, which is tusla.fostering@tusla.ie.
Okay.
So people can contact us through any of those methods and then give their details, and a social worker will contact you. I'm just thinking, Trina, there's one thing that I didn't mention, which always also comes up with is around people's own children, whether they have children or not.
Yeah, does that matter?
It doesn't. You don't have to have children to foster. We have lots of people, couples who have fostered who never had children of their own, and we have single people who have fostered who don't have children of their own. So you don't necessarily have to have had children. If you do have children, though, we do recommend a particular age gap between your children and the children that you foster. So we find that works really well for everybody involved, because it's not too much closeness, too much competition between children.
The sibling rivalry.
Exactly. And, you know, it's a big change if you have your own children foster child coming in. So, you know, to still kind of have that little bit of separation in terms of your class and stuff can be really important. So we recommend an age gap of 2 years between your own child and a foster child. And your youngest child needs to be over the age of 3.
Okay, your youngest over the age of 3. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's just, I suppose, because it's such a busy time when you have small children, and foster children will require quite a bit of attention, especially in the early days. So it's to make sure that you are able to meet the needs of everybody involved. So we recommend it over the age of 3.
Well, Jackie, thanks so much for that information today. Jackie Smith there, Tusla Principal Social Worker, giving us loads of information about fostering.
Thanks for having me, Tina. Take care now.
Bye. This is Something for the Weekend. It's Ireland's Classic Hits.